Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI says Christmas is God's answer to mankind's yearning for peace. As we get ready to enjoy a cozy Christmas with our families, we hear of the multitude of poor with an uncertain future and often no permanent home. As we prepare to celebrate the birthday of Jesus, Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright reflects on what his coming really means to each of us. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday said Christmas is much more than the season of Santa Claus and sugar plums. It's God's answer to mankind's yearning for peace. The Pope's words came as he reflected on Christmas and the town of Bethlehem before praying the midday Angelus with the pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square. Charles Collins has this report.
Pope Benedict on the fourth Sunday of Advent said Christmas is God's answer to the human drama in search of real peace, not a fairy tale. He was speaking before the Angelus prayer in St. Peter's Square.
On this first Sunday of Advent, we are filled with joy because the Lord is at hand. We head into this gospel about Mary's journey to visit her cousin Elizabeth. Just as Mary traveled through the hill country of Judah to share with her kinswoman the joyful news of Christ's coming, so too the Church is called to journey through history, proclaiming the wondrous message of salvation.
In this time full of expectation and hope, the Pope invited everyone to turn their gaze to Bethlehem, which he called the city symbol of peace in the Holy Land and throughout the world. The Pope acknowledged with deep regret that unfortunately nowadays the city has not achieved a stable peace, but a peace strongly sought after and desired. But the Holy Father said, God never resigns himself to this state of things. And this is why this year in Bethlehem and throughout the world, the mystery of Christmas will be renewed in the Church.
Rivolgo un cordiale saluto al personale dell'Osservatore Romano.
After the Angelus, the Pope made a special greeting to the staff of L'Osservatore Romano, the Vatican newspaper. The paper will, on every Wednesday and Sunday of the Christmas season in St. Peter's Square, sell the newspaper with an icon of the Nativity. It's part of an initiative to help fund a new school in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The Pope gave his support to the initiative before giving his greetings in various languages. I'm Charles Collins.
It's a great feast of Christmas draws near. I invoke God's abundant blessings upon all of you and upon your families and loved ones at home.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. Imagine being homeless or even just desperately poor at Christmas. For most of us, this is a time to relax, enjoy being with our families, most probably exchange gifts and eat a few big meals. But for hundreds of thousands of people all over the world, Christmas merely underlines an uncertain future and what may feel like a bottomless well of sadness. With no permanent home and maybe no family, how can homeless people plan the rest of their lives? It seems like a good idea to me to take special notice of poor and homeless people at Christmas. And so does my colleague Lydia O'Kane, who spoke to some of those on the front line, working to provide more than just a roof over the heads of some of the most vulnerable people in society. Well, she discovered that we can all do our bit. But first of all, she asked Duncan Shrubsall, head of policy and strategy at Crisis, the British charity for single homeless people, what are some of the main reasons people find themselves homeless in the first place?
People become homeless for a combination of structural factors and personal factors. So structural factors, there isn't enough housing available, they can't afford to access it, they may not have a job, they may have other issues. And then personal factors in people's lives, relationship breakdown may happen, maybe a bereavement, maybe a health issue. Anyone could become homeless. Something happens in their lives, a sort of trigger happens, and people decline and spiral downwards. And the key is to say, how do we ensure that everybody not just gets stable accommodation, but gets their self-confidence back, improves their health, has their potential recognized, and ultimately can get back into society and work and have a place to call home.
A place you can call home, that doesn't seem like such a big deal, does it? But reality tells us that it is. And Patrick Burke, Chief Executive Officer of the Simon Communities of Ireland, confirms that homelessness really is something that can happen to anyone.
Absolutely. I'm always amazed as I go around the country and speak to people who use our services that they all have their own individual stories and their own paths.
The Simon Communities is a federation that provides accommodation and support services to homeless people across Ireland.
Most of them, like all of us, grew up in a home and a family, and we never thought that we would end up in a situation where we would be without a home or perhaps have an addiction or, you know, lose our families and that kind of stuff. It can happen to anybody, and it happens to a whole range of people, not just from one socioeconomic background. It happens within all socioeconomic groups. Clearly, people experiencing poverty and social exclusion have a higher risk of becoming homeless because I suppose the social protections they have aren't as strong as those who have good jobs and good family support networks and live in good communities.
I mentioned in the beginning the sadness that must come with homelessness. And of course there's fear for your future, as well as loneliness for sure. But how about danger? All too often, the streets don't seem very safe to me.
The streets can be a very dangerous place. And some people say they feel threatened by people who are homeless, but actually it's around the other way. A homeless person, we did some research, is 13 times more likely to be a victim of violence than a member of the general public. And much of that violence is perpetrated by the public. You think about someone coming out of a bar late at night, they may take a kick at a homeless person. We've had, you know, people being urinated on, and much worse can be assault and even murders being known to happen. So the streets can be a very dangerous place, and not just that physical danger, but think what it does to people's self-esteem and confidence when they're constantly on the lookout to ensure that they can keep themselves safe.
It's sometimes a vicious circle for homeless people who find themselves on the streets. I mean, they sometimes don't have a social security number, or they don't have an address where they can, you know, they can have a domain fixed address. It's hard to get work. It's sometimes hard to get into the system when you're homeless, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Homelessness is the worst thing about it is a downward spiral. Most homeless people, when they first become homeless, they think it's short term, it's going to be a temporary blip, and it becomes this bigger thing as everything reinforces each other. They might have held down a job and they lose the home, they can't hold down the job, and their health gets worse and they lose contact with their friends and family and they can't register with a doctor, and all of it kind of spirals downwards. And that's why it can just be a real awful circumstance for people. And we need to turn what was a downward problem into an upward spiral of things starting to go right for people. And then those individual right things, getting a bit of accommodation, getting some health sorted out, getting new friends and moving back towards work. That's our challenge for us as homelessness organisations and us as crisis.
And speaking of poverty and homelessness, I cannot but consider the ongoing global economic crisis. Doing programmes and reading the news, I've discovered that in the past few years the rich have become richer, whilst the poor, and especially the middle class, have become much poorer, swelling the ranks of those in dire need of the most basic necessities.
Across the UK, nearly 500,000 people have lost their jobs this year, and nearly 50,000 households will have been repossessed. So it put an enormous strain on people. Lots of people are wanting advice or in desperate need. There has been some increase in the numbers of people sleeping on the streets, about 15% over the last year. Many people, we think, are, whilst they might have lost a home, they've now, first of all, they've gone to friends and family and they're helping themselves out that way. But we expect, as those sources of informal support exhaust themselves, that more people will end up homeless and with nowhere to turn. And all the research shows that the social effects of a recession will take much longer to work through. Unemployment may rise for another 5 years, and pressure on mental health, people's relationships, their happiness, all of these things will take a long time to work through, and we're certainly not out of the woods yet, whatever may happen to the economy.
And speaking to other workers in the field, Lydia discovered the near future is not looking rosy, as Rachel Orr, media officer at Shelter, told her. Shelter is a UK homelessness charity that runs a housing helpline and has a network of housing aid centres.
Well, I think what we're concerned at the moment is the possibility of a kind of double-dip recession, which I think a lot of economists have been speculating about. And I mean, as a lot of countries across the world have, our interest rates are currently incredibly low. And I think there is a bit of a worry that as interest rates rise, which they're bound to, people will then be struggling again with their housing costs. I think also there's a fear that private rents could rise because as a lot of the reluctant landlords, actually, if their properties are able to be sold in the next year as the market begins to pick up, then that will mean that there's less landlords on the market, but still a lot more households trying to rent privately. So obviously that basic supply and demand problem means that private landlords will be able to increase their rent, which obviously means that a lot of people who are already struggling might just find it impossible to pay their rent.
Yes, it's not only the homeless who are without a roof over their heads, but increasingly those who have been made redundant and or those whose homes have been repossessed and feel the need to turn to charities for help.
Do you find, John, that there may be people who had jobs this time last year, this time 2 years ago, who were relatively comfortable and really find it very difficult to ask for help, almost feel a shame that they don't have a job, that, you know, they were fine 2 years ago and that, you know, they feel that they can't ask, that they want to try and struggle on?
Oh, yes, that's a very common thing.
John Monaghan is National Vice President of the Vincent de Paul Society, Ireland's largest voluntary charitable organisation.
It takes a lot of courage, a lot of acceptance to come and contact a charity, because particularly if you've been someone who was doing pretty well this time last year, may even have been donating to the society, and now find that you've got to lift a phone, make a phone call and make a contact with a group and ask for help, that's a very, very hard thing to do. But of course, the underlying theme of the Vincent de Paul is there are really three strands. The first, that we're available to offer friendship and support, both emotional and financial. And the second one is that we will work to try and move people on from where they are to a better position. And the third one is that we try to raise with politicians the problems and the reasons why those people are in that position in the first place. So it's a bit like the story of the Good Samaritan. It's sort of providing help but with attitude. In other words, we look after people. Yes, we'll get them up and get them on the road again. And then we'll go and ask the question, why were they there in the first place? For people coming to us who never have been with us before, the one thing we stress with them is that their conversations with us are in total confidence. Nobody will know. My own family don't know who I'm visiting when I go out on my Vincent de Paul work, nor should they. So, and I would on occasions be visiting neighbours. So it's important that people would understand that we treat their particular problems in total confidence, and we do so in a non-judgmental way, and they can be assured that it's just between themselves and us, the Vincent de Paul members, and we will do what we can to alleviate their current problems and indeed help them to move on.
As Lydia very eloquently puts it, the work these charities do is a 365-day-a-year affair. But as I mentioned right at the beginning, at Christmas, poverty and homelessness are particularly poignant. What special thing are you doing, Lydia asked all of her interviewees, to make this Christmas a happier time for all?
Well, I suppose the most immediate one, your listeners might be aware, over the past week we've had unbelievable floods here in Ireland, and we've been overwhelmed with the generosity of people who have given us furniture and bedding and clothing and indeed money to help flood victims. So that's something that we're doing very practically coming up to Christmas. In addition to that, you'll find that our conferences, our groups, as they would be more commonly referred to, throughout the country, and we have about 1,300 of them who will be delivering Christmas hampers. They will be, or alternatively, they will be providing vouchers for stores so that people can go in and purchase their own food or their own clothing and whatever. So that's a massive operation that goes on, and all of the 9,500 members of the society here in Ireland will be engaged with that right up to and including Christmas Eve, and indeed some of us will be out on Christmas Day if the need arises in the event of an emergency. So it's a huge operation in just making sure that Firstly, that families who are in need of basic necessities get those. But in addition, we also want to try and make sure that Santa Claus remembers that even if there is a recession, that he needs to come. And so we rely on the generosity of the general public who provide presents to us at various Christmas trees that we erect around the country in different department stores and shopping centres. And then we ensure that the elves in the Vincent Hall make sure those presents get to the North Pole so Santa will deliver them. And so that no child wakes up on Christmas morning and finds that there's not a gift, even a small one, for them that they might have had something last year.
Well, one of the things that Shelter's done in the last year is we've branched out the kind of advice that we're able to give, and we have a lot of people who work for us now who are specialists in debt advice. So we found that a lot of people were coming to us with housing problems, and whilst we had a lot of specialists in the field of housing, often these problems with housing are not just specific to housing, there's a lot of other problems as well. So our services now offer some very specific debt advice, and we've just launched a 1.2 million fundraising campaign, which is the cost to run our services in November and December. And we're asking people if they can donate some money to help Shelter's advice services so we can help people who are having problems with housing or problems with debt. You know, it's an incredibly expensive time of year, and I think people feel under a lot of pressure to be spending money. And often people who are, you know, really at the kind of bottom end of the, kind of poorest household, as soon as they have some money, they see the pressure to, you know, spend it on Christmas presents and then realise they might not have enough money to pay their rent. And we feel that we're in a unique position to be able to offer them kind of help and advice and support over the festive period, which is why we're asking people to donate some money to us this Christmas so we can help people who otherwise wouldn't be looking forward to a happy Christmas to maybe just get on a little bit better.
At the moment, we are reminding people that Christmas is a time when we mean to be mindful of the most vulnerable in our society, and we're doing that through our interviews like this. We're talking to the media, and we're working very closely with corporate givers and with individuals to get the message out there to people to say that this is a time of year where we need your support to try and make sure that people don't have to stay on the streets, and that we can, you know, with their help, find solutions for people at this time of the year. It's really important. It's a lonely time for people on the streets. It's a lonely time for people who've lost their families, and we need to provide the community. We are the Simon community, and we need to provide that community more, especially at this time of the year, I think, for people.
Homelessness is a great problem. People who are homeless, that is, you know, it's a problem year round, but at Christmas, just think about it. People spend time with their families. They start thinking about New Year's resolutions. It's a real time for the problems of being homelessness are sort of there, even bigger. And so therefore, what we provide, we've been doing this for 38 years. We open temporary centres over Christmas. We're using a whole range of schools and colleges and other buildings where we'll put hot meal, food, games, companionship, activities, but also vital services. People can get healthcare checkup, get housing advice, and they can set themselves up with an email account, even get their CV sorted, find out about what new opportunities in the new year. We couldn't do this without thousands of people donating their money, and we have 8,000 volunteers who work with us, and it helps to bring a real kind of ray of light to many homeless people and helps set them up for a better 2010.
And to make your 2010 a better one too, why not donate some time, some money, or an extra Christmas gift to a local charity, or even sign up as a volunteer to spend a festive dinner with someone who has no one with whom to share a slice of Christmas cake. As we prepare to celebrate the birthday of Jesus, Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright reflects on what his coming really means to each of us.
In a few days' time, we'll be celebrating the birthday of Jesus Christ in Bethlehem. It is a very important moment for each of us to reflect. What does Jesus really mean to me? Is he just the founder of a massive religion which has spread throughout the world but not always lived up to its standards, to its teachings, has been notably hypocritical from time to time? Or is it the message of one who genuinely wants to love us, to save us from ourselves, to lead us to true community, which is to affirm ourselves, to be confident in the people we are, accept ourselves as we are, on the one hand, but then to accept everyone else as they are, not as we want them to be. A community built on diversity, diversity in which each individual has a unique contribution to make, whatever age, male or female, and each of us has an obligation to listen to that contribution. The life of the young Jesus wasn't easy. The birth was in a place not home. There were threats to his life in his early months, and his parents had to take avoiding action, a trip to Egypt to escape from persecution. And then there was a moment when Jesus submitted to the rules of the law, of the religion into which he was born, the presentation in the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. Then he was lost, and they spent some days trying to find him, finding him at that young age, teaching with some of the scholars and the learned theologians of the day. Then back home to Nazareth for a few decades of ordinary life. That birth, then, is saying something about our human condition and what it should be, what it can be, and what it shouldn't be. And each of us, in her or his own life, knows good moments of love, of enjoyment, of happiness, and perhaps more moments of struggle and pain and suffering, anxiety, worry. And all of that is taken into the life, the thinking, and indeed the actions of Jesus, a few of which are recorded in our Gospels passed down to us. And I think at Christmas I would like to just focus for a moment on three elements in that life presented by Jesus, which are important to us at this moment as Christians throughout the world. The first is the huge importance of silence, of reflection, if you like, contemplation. Some time during our day to be deliberately quiet, to reflect, to go to that other level of our being and discover the truth of who we are deep down. Because the birth of Jesus and the teaching of Jesus and the vision of Jesus challenges us at that level. We need not just to think about it, we need to live with it, and we have to understand at a deeper level of how that birth makes us more important, more unique, indeed challenges us to be more loving. My second reflection is that out of that silence we need to learn. Learn not just dry dogmatic truths, but the one truth which underpins the millions of words in theological writings. And it is the truth. Jesus Christ became man to tell us that we're loved as we are. We have our strengths and we have our weaknesses. But to know that we are lovable, that the motive for that birth was love of us, each one of us, past, present, and future. And that truth of love is to remove that huge burden of guilt that so many of us, indeed all of us, I think, in one way or another, carries. A guilt that I'm not quite good enough. Or I have a past which is littered with rules broken, morals discarded, and I feel unworthy. But I need to go one step further. What do I mean unworthy? If Jesus Christ became man, all human beings are worthy. because of that one gesture. If Jesus Christ is God as a human being, then the human being must be worthwhile, that element of giving, of love, to enter our human world. That is a truth which we can consider and think about every day. Yes, I may have done things wrong, but there is a way back. I can say sorry. I can ask forgiveness, and I will get it. And I can adopt the simple rule, I love the other as I would want the other to love me. Just quite simple to think about that and to let it infect our silent meditation. And then there's a third thought, which lies deep in the reality of our lives. It's the thought of death. Because the one thing Jesus Christ came to do was to remove fear from death. And the only way he could remove the fear from death was by showing that death is not an end. To show that there is a new life, a risen life after death. And that risen life after death gives us a vision for the present moment. And that vision for the present moment is a vision which enables us to have the confidence to say, yes, I do believe in Jesus Christ, because Christ has shown me the depth of the being that I am. He has shown me the depth of love that I experience and can give, which is forgiveness and forgiving and being forgiven. And he has shown me that in the pains and sufferings of daily living, there is also the truth that it's temporary, it will end. And the fulfillment of our life is resurrection. And whether we are the victim of a disease we didn't earn, we had no right to expect, or whether we are the martyr, the one who stands up for a truth and is killed for it, or whether we are the faithful parent who has looked after her or his children faithfully and each other, who's given all and dies after a long age, no matter what the circumstances, each one of us is important forever in the risen life of Christ, the truth that adds depth to my being now, and the truth that gives hope through the forgiveness of sin, through the forgiveness of each other and the building up of a community which is alive now and in Christ will live with God forever.
You've been listening to Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni, wishing you, of course, a very happy Christmas. We'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.